Well, all you Crystal Skull buffs, just stick around because we're going to talk now with two special guests this half hour. Our first guest, Jaap van Etten. Jaap has a PhD in biology with a specialty in ecology. About 20 years ago, his life changed dramatically, shifting the focus in his life more towards spirituality. And he believes that science and spirituality need to be integrated again. Me too. This led him to study metaphysical ecology. In 1994, Jaap had an emotional encounter with his first crystal skull. We'll have him tell you about that. He realized that the crystal skulls form a link between Earth and human consciousness. Since then, he has included crystal skulls in his studies. Jaap's scientific perspective provides a very strong foundation and understanding regarding the energy of crystal skulls. Here's Jaap van Etten on Coast to Coast. Jaap, welcome to the program.
Thank you, George. It's a pleasure to be on again.
Tell me, as you did about a year ago, for those who are brand new to the program, Jaap, tell me about this encounter with this crystal skull and what happened to you.
Yeah. It was, for me at that time, to be honest with you, very embarrassing, because I was this rather straightforward scientific person. And I was going to a place in Sedona. I was still living in the Netherlands at that time. And this person looked at me and saw my interest in crystals. And he said, I have a surprise for you. Sit down, close your eyes, and wait. You know, and I don't know how you would feel, George, but when somebody is asking me that, I always get this feeling like, I don't know what's going on.
Exactly.
And this woman comes into the room. I could hear her walking in, and she gives something cold and big in my hands. And here I am, grown-up guy, very scientifically oriented, and I burst out in tears. And I'm sobbing for half an hour until I finally could open my eyes and looked in this ugly face of a crystal skull. Well, you may understand, I was hooked on the big question, how can any person have such an experience?
You know, Jaap, these crystal skulls are so baffling to people, you know, and I've been studying them for years. I can't understand how they made them, first of all. I mean, the perfection is unbelievable. Some of them, of course, you know, stone grinding. Others, I don't know, they look like they've been cut out by lasers, don't they?
Yeah, there are so many different theories, and the only thing that we can conclude is we don't know. You know, so there are a lot of stories and a lot of hypotheses. You know, in that sense, it's always nice when you get a big gathering of a lot of people, like on the 11-11-11, where different people with different what is defined as ancient skulls are coming together and give people the opportunity to experience for themselves, wow, these are really very interesting tools. These are objects that we still have so many questions about, that touches so many different people. And then to see them gathered so that people can really look for themselves, that those stories are not all fake and not come from certain type of people. Because what we see in the many events that we have done is people have this experience and say, there is something to it. I've experienced something I never experienced. And that, I think, is why it's so important to bring them together and give people this opportunity to see that it is not just one of those New Age fake stories, that there is truly something to those interesting objects.
How do you think the ancients, Jaap, used crystal skulls, and for what purpose?
I think over time, George, people have used them in different ways. You know, as you already in the introduction said, my fascination is energies. And I know energies are not, the subtle energies are not scientifically measurable as yet. So you go into all kinds of what you call subjective observations and try to build up an idea and a model of how these different things could work. But if you become more and more sensitive while working with them, it's like learning a language. And that language is beginning to give you more and more information. And then you verify with other people and slowly you build up a kind of an idea. And what we see is that crystal skulls over time have been used by people in many different ways. And I think it originally started actually as a device to store information. And then we go back to the legend of the 13, what people call original crystal skulls.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go to what the different indigenous people believe, then the basic story is it's not actually about initially about crystal skulls. Initially, it's about information. And the story is that we human beings are on a path of evolution, and we need information in a time of big change. Well, I think we can all agree that we are living in a time of big changes, and there are many predictions like the Mayan calendar, but not only the Mayans who say these are the end times. These are the times where things are changing, and what they mean with end times is something is ending in order for something new to start happening. And the belief is, and that's what the Mayans are saying also, is we need to bring the crystal skulls together, the 13 crystal skulls together. Well, from my perspective, is what they are saying is we need to master sufficient information and energy to be able to make a shift in consciousness. And every crystal skull, whether they are contemporary or ancient, have the potential to tap into that information system, but of course the ancient ones used, fully activated, understood in that time are the ones that give us the example of how to learn to access that information system. And that's why these ancient ones, the ancient skulls, are so important. And I don't have an ancient crystal skull, and I work with the contemporary ones, but I use the ancient ones as the model of beginning to understand. They are the beacons on the path to understanding crystal skulls, which means beacons on the path of understanding information. That is very important for us human beings in this time of change.
Jaap, what's the possibility that on December 21st, 2012, the 13 original crystal skulls kind of light up or glow or kind of turn on? Is that possible?
Well, one of the things that I've learned in working with crystal skulls, there is a lot possible. You know, what is the key point, I think, George, is one word, and that's consciousness, or awareness, if you want. Awareness is that part of consciousness where we can work with actively. It is our consciousness that determines whether or not we can access that information. It's our consciousness that activates those information systems. So the question for me is, are sufficient people awake to be able to activate that particular information to make it available in what people call the collective so that we can make that shift? You know, in a sense, you can say that's the lightening up of the crystal skulls. So, yes, I can, from that perspective, go along with your terminology.
Jaap's book is called Crystal Skulls Interacting with a Phenomenon. Up next in just a moment on Coast to Coast, Carolyn Ford joins us. She's the guardian of the ancient crystal skull Einstein. So get ready for that on Coast to Coast AM. Are you going to enjoy this segment? Carolyn Ford, guardian of the ancient crystal skull Einstein, the world's largest ancient crystal skull. Now, she was a guardian to Einstein for 20 years before the time was right to introduce Einstein to the public. He made his debut in New York City at the 10-10-10 conference. And only a few people had met the skull of consciousness before that. One of those, of course, the late Nick Dorsorino, world-renowned crystal skull researcher. Nick was once quoted as saying, "This skull far exceeds my expectations of an ancient crystal skull." Here's Carolyn Ford. Hi, Carolyn. How are you?
Hi, George. I'm great.
Good to have
Thanks
you with us.
Thanks for having me here.
My pleasure. So you were the guardian of Einstein for 20 years before you brought him out. How come? what took so long?
Well, I like to say that I do what I'm told. The skull really was a guiding force in my life, and I was told constantly to keep him very private. So I lived in Sedona, Arizona for all this time without sharing him with anybody. Maybe a handful of people knew, and I waited for that time to be revealed to me. And last year, when Kendall Morgan was putting on the 10-10-10 event, he called and asked, and all of a sudden, I found myself saying, "Yes, it's time."
How
and then,
did
of
you
course,
get?
I went into total shock. But
how did you get Einstein there?
How did I get Einstein where to New York?
How do you go? I mean, how do you carry a crystal skull onto a plane?
Well, when you've got a 33-pound skull, it's really quite a trick. You know, it's it's quite heavy, and then you put it in some type of protective carrying case, and it's even heavier. But we flew, and in America, you can still fly with weight that is, you know, it's up to 50 pounds. You can carry it on. So
sure.
It's always quite entertaining to go through security, and they look at it, and, of course, they're quite shocked at what they see. They used to be even more shocked 20 years ago when I would travel with them. But now there's such a resurgence of crystal skulls. They look at me and they go, oh, yeah, we're used to this. We see these all the time now.
Oh, really? So, interesting.
Yeah, I was quite surprised myself that it's not a big deal like it used to be.
It would be funny if Einstein said, I'm not going to the screening machine.
Well, I'm going to tell you that I started traveling in an RV for events that aren't too far away because we don't really like taking Einstein through the X-ray process and that whole, you know, the whole airline process is
That's
a little
right.
bit compromising, if you were. So if I get a chance, I prefer to drive.
You're the guardian of Einstein. Does that mean you're the owner of Einstein?
Well, yeah, technically I am the owner. More people prefer to assign the term guardian because of, you know, the...
But he's yours.
Yes, he's definitely mine.
Okay. How did you get him?
That's a good question.
It sure is.
Well, 20 years ago, I have always had a somewhat, let's say, mystical life.
Okay.
And I had an experience in a workshop where they introduced small crystal skulls and we did a meditation. And I had never seen crystal skulls before, and I thought this was a very unique thing. So I did the meditation with it, and in the meditation, the skull spoke to me and said, you're the guardian. And, of course, I didn't have a clue of what that meant, and I didn't think much of it, except that I thought it was really cute that this skull talked to me. So I called up one of my good friends who, you know, was a dealer in gemstones and minerals, and his name was Jack. And I said, Jack, can you find me a crystal skull? I'd like to play with one of these. And so he said, sure, Carolyn, I'll get right on it. And I would say within 24 hours, I got a phone call, and he said, Carolyn, I found your skull. And I said, really, that fast? And he said, yeah, but there's a problem. And I said, well, what's that? And he said, well, you know, I only asked for like a little 2.5-inch skull to play with.
Yeah.
And he said, well, it's a little bit larger than you were looking for. And as it turned out, when he went to his store the next day, there was a man standing there with, like a suitcase. And in this suitcase, he had a number of artifacts that he had been given as payment from the estate of a man who owed him money. And, you know, so he was paid off with these artifacts, and he wanted to just turn them into cash. So he went to my friend Jack within 24 hours of me asking for a skull. And Jack knew, we were very close, Jack and his wife Colleen and myself at the time, very close. And he knew intuitively that this was really what was meant for me. So he called me. I had just moved to Southern California, and he says, Carolyn, you need to come right away. And I said, well, you know, get on a plane and come up there, because he's telling me. I said, are you sure? He says, you got to trust me on this one. So
yeah,
I flew up there and met the skull and just immediately started crying and knew that this was my baby. And in that moment, it was so apparent to me that it was destiny. You know, there was, you know, people say, well, I'm not into skulls. And I said, you know, I'm not either, really. I mean, I don't even know what it means to be into skulls. I just, you know,
this was different, wasn't it?
It came to me in this particular way. So it was quite a profound experience. And, you know, what I always like to say is, in that moment when I met Einstein and it was 33 pounds, not a little 2.5-inch skull, I looked at Jack and I said, well, I guess, you know, size really doesn't matter anymore, does it?
Do you communicate with Einstein?
I do. Rather, it's like Einstein communicates with me.
With you. Okay.
you know, it's not a consistent faucet that I can turn on and off. It's intermittent, and when it's important, I'm told.
What kind of messages does he send you, Carolyn? And what's he say about the future?
Well, very interesting. The messages, you know, let me start with saying for the last 20 years I kept Einstein private because he's been training me. He's been bringing people to me. He's had me become aware of a number of things. And everything that has been brought to me, let's say through Einstein, has been in helping humanity evolve and become more aware of themselves and their true nature. So for years, Einstein was bringing me formulas. I make plant medicine. I work with plants, and I make a form of vibrational formula called essences. And I was given formulas in my dream time for many years, and they were, you know, to help people.
Almost like an Edgar Cayce reading, except they're messages from the crystal skull.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
And all of the formulas mostly helped me evolve and then, of course, worked for the greater good. And, you know, we've had worldwide distribution with these formulas.
Carolyn, we're a couple minutes left in, and I definitely want to get the predictions of Einstein for the future. How far out does he look? Obviously looks at 2012, but does he go beyond that?
Well, you know, he goes beyond it in a sense of the next year, 2013, and his message is this, you know, to really, for people to align with themselves and with the earth and become more in harmony, and to look to 2013, because this is when we start beginning a new world in a new way, and it doesn't mean that there will be destruction per se. He's never concerned about that. It's more about human evolution, and this is a very transitory time for humanity, and
he's right.
He's asking each person to wake up. When people come and sit with him, they burst out crying. You know, people sit in the presence of a crystal skull. It's like a mirror, a reflection, and they remember. They remember. So
he doesn't see catastrophe in the future.
No.
That's good. He may be the only non-doom and gloomer we've heard about in a long time.
Yeah, no, he's actually, we travel and we present, and that's one of his biggest messages, let go of the fear, let go of the fear. You know, if we move forward with fear, that's a problem. You know, and for all of us to really take the high road and to let go of that fear is really how we are going to evolve and embrace the future very gracefully. So the exciting part is when we go to the Crystal Skulls World, you know, the Mysteries Gateway Conference coming up at the 11-11-11 is an opportunity for all these skulls to get together and transmit this beautiful energy and this higher vibration that we are moving, you know, we are moving from one world into another is really how Einstein has guided me to translate
so there is a positive transformation ahead.
Absolutely. This is one of the most exciting times to be alive, and to embrace this is to really embrace the beauty of the time that we live in. It's just so special.
Carolyn, finally a little hope, and it comes from a 33-pound crystal skull now. But at least it's worth it. Tell us about your website. Where can people get information on Einstein?
The website is EinsteinTheCrystalSkull.com, and there you can see lots of photographs of the temple that has been built for Einstein and the life, the type of life he lives here. There's lots of fun pictures there, and there are products, formulas that are to help us transform and move into the future. There are lots of information about my story and some messages from Einstein as well.
Super. Well, that sounds great. Carolyn Ford, our guest, as we continue, Stephen Mailer joins us. More on The Crystal Skulls on Coast to Coast AM. And as we continue our special report on crystal skulls, up next, Stephen Mailer, his book, The Crystal Skulls, Astonishing Portals to Man's Past. Get ready. Well, one of my favorite guests back here on Coast to Coast, Stephen Mailer, has been involved in crystal skull research since 1979. as an archaeologist, prehistorian, specializing in an area of ancient cultural artifacts. Stephen discusses ancient crystal skulls and how they may have been made, for what purposes, by whom. And here he is back on Coast to Coast. Stephen, how are you, my friend?
I'm fine, George, and it's always great to speak with you.
You too. You too. You know, this work that you've done is absolutely riveting. Somewhere along the line in your career, something got you into crystal skulls. What was it?
Well, it's a very interesting thing. I was actually involved working as a staff research scientist for the Rosicrucian Order, AMARC, in San Jose, California. So at that time already, I had been established as an archaeologist. I was actually known as the archaeologist for the Rosicrucian Order at the time, and I had a background in prehistory, and then it got me into metaphysics. So as I was in that department, we were approached by a gentleman in San Jose, California. His name was John Zamora, and he had been working in Mexico doing some business with some Mexican people, and he had gotten involved with a man who claimed to be a Mayan priest. And so one thing led to another. He had been doing business with folks in Mexico, and they decided then that these people were trying to deal with some antiquities, to sell them in the United States. They claimed that there was a Mayan village, that they were starving and to support the village. And so that's how I got involved. John Zamora contacted the Rosicrucian Order. He was actually told by this Mayan priest to take this information to the Rosicrucian Order. And what they had was a couple of crystal skulls as well as a whole bunch of Mayan artifacts. And so this was November 1979, and it was brought to my attention. And just like Yap said, just like Carolyn said, just like everybody says who gets involved with these things, once you get into a crystal skull, boom, you're hooked. And that was it. You know, it's not been my primary life, but it's been a major part of my research since. And it's, you know, it hasn't stopped since, and it increases every year.
Of the 13 original ones, when do you think they were made?
Well, George, we've spoken about this before. I don't necessarily support an idea of 13 original, and neither did Nick Nocerino. And as you've mentioned, I was blessed, in fact, that I've been trained by what I consider the two greatest crystal skull researchers who ever lived, and that was Dr. Marcel J. Vogel, who was a chemist, senior scientist at IBM, and also a Rosicrucian, and of course the great F.R. Nick Nocerino.
Right, now, he was a giant.
We didn't really support the idea. You see, I have a problem, George, with the word original. That is a problem word for me because I'm a person that does not support a Big Bang theory. I don't think there ever was a beginning, and so I do not think there's an end. I think we're just an interminable amount of cycles in between. So I have a problem with the idea original. How far does that go back? Because the idea of ancient crystal skulls, now we go by the definition and the really the classification that Nick Nocerino set up for us. He was the one that really did the modern beginning of scientific research in crystal skulls, going back way to 1944 when he established in New York City an organization called the Society of Crystal Skulls International. He then incorporated in California in 1945. Nick Nocerino was the first person in California to get a teaching credential in parapsychology in the early 50s. So he was the supreme researcher in crystal skulls. So he established the idea that what we call an ancient crystal skull is a crystal that has been carved into the shape of a human skull over 1,000 years ago. That's the benchmark we use. Anything over 1,000 years carved as a skull, we call it ancient. But George, when that definition of ancient, there's many different levels. Now, I can tell you, first of all, why we don't agree with 13 original is Nick Nocerino documented that he saw as many as 18 skulls that he classified as being ancient. I've seen as many as 9, perhaps, that I would classify as ancient. But are they part of the original ones? I don't know. The idea is, if we could have a skull that's carved, a crystal that's carved as a skull 1,001 years ago, we say it's ancient.
Right.
But there could be another skull that was carved 3,000 years ago, another one 5,000 years ago.
So
and
true.
Some, I will tell you, I believe could be older than 10,000 years. So they're all ancient, but there's different levels. What we really came to, and now let me tell you what I think was your origin of where this urban myth comes from of the original skulls. Nick Nocerino first was the one who brought it up, and then when I started to work with crystal skulls, many of us who worked with crystal skulls would see an image of 13 skulls. We would see 12 in a circle with a master skull 13th in the middle. And many of us saw that. And many people who've worked with crystal skulls have seen that image. So the idea came of 13. Now, 13 is key, of course. Now, there's always something to this. 13 is a sacred number to the Maya. It's part of their sacred calendar. 13 was also a sacred number to the ancient Egyptians. It happens to be the number of Osiris. It's a number of regeneration, resurrection. How the number 13 only becomes unlucky, and you and I have discussed this before, is because of Friday, October 13th, 1307, when the Pope and the King of France, Philip le Bel, declared war on the Knights Templars.
That's right.
And that became known as Black Friday. And that's the only time that the number 13 has become unlucky in the modern age. Before that, it was a number, a secret number, a number of resurrection. So it is a number. So we have seen that. I believe, George, there's sets of 13. So there is 12 around a master skull. Now, are there 13 original master skulls? I don't know. I can't answer that. I just don't relate to the term original, because where does it go back to? You know, again, the idea actually came down as an urban myth, and I think we discussed this last year. We can say it again for people to understand that the full myth is that there are 13 original skulls that came from extraterrestrials down to our planet and were given to different cultures to grow with. That's the myth.
Bingo.
However, George, believe me, in my research, I have not found one Native American elder who's ever said that that's a Native American legend, and nor have I ever come across a Mayan elder who says that's a Mayan legend. Now, the Mayans talk about the skulls a lot, and we can talk about what the Mayans say about the skulls, because I had a great private audience with a Mayan elder last year at our conference, but they don't talk about 13 original skulls. They just talk about the crystal skulls.
Stephen, do they talk about how they were made and why?
Yes. Now, there's different theories. Again, as Yap said, there's many different theories. And Yap's information tonight was wonderful. In fact, information, as he said, is a key about the crystal skulls. I certainly agree. We've had many different ideas how they were made. Now, George, I will say to you, I think that a Mitchell Hedges skull can be made today. And there actually is people who have carved them by hand with a movable jaw. They can be carved. Modern-day skulls, this is where we get into the controversy. Are they phony? Are they original? Are they ancient? Because we can do that today, of course, with high-speed wheels, with diamond lapidary wheels. You can polish the skull, and I can usually am very good at determining when I get to a skull whether it's modern carved or whether it's ancient. But we believe they were carved by hand, George. Now, that comes to how could that be done? Well, you're talking about a person of supreme consciousness, a master shaman, working with mind and working, we believe, now again, we've seen different scenarios, but one person saw a kick wheel. Someone who was using a wheel that was spinning a crystal, the mother stone, with water pressure, and then polishing with a diamond grit. Only diamond, again, crystal, quartz. We have to understand, what are we talking about? We're talking about quartz crystal. It is 7 on a Mohs scale, M-O-H-S. People can Google that, M-O-H-S. That's the skull. That's the scale that geology uses to date the hardness of a mineral.
7. So what would a diamond be?
10.
Okay.
So, in other words, to carve quartz, you have to be 7 or higher. They use carborundum, which is also, you know, you can use harder stones. But most carving today in granite and quartz is done with diamond-tipped drills. So this is how the anthropologists claim that they can find out that these skulls are not ancient, because you put them under a scanning electron microscope, you do cast mold, you make molds, cast of the teeth, and they can see if they find tool marks. Now, what you see under a scanning electron microscope, if it is a modern tool mark, you see a very straight cut line, very straight. But if you look under it and you see if it would be carved by hand, it would be very uneven, and the polish would be very uneven. And that's basically one of the main tools that I use to judge a skull is when I first get a crystal skull, I've been trained again by Nick Nocerino and by Marcel Vogel. We use both sides of the brain to work with a crystal skull. But first, I do, like Yap, and this is why Dr. Yap Van Eaton is such an important source in the field, because he's a trained scientist. He comes from a hard science background. Well, I have 3 degrees in the sciences. I do have a hard science background. Again, there's many academics who don't think that Yap and I are real scientists, but that's another issue. But we do come at it as scientific background. And Nick Nocerino established a scientific basis to do this. So when I deal with a crystal skull, the first thing I do is look at it as if it was an side effect. I take the magnifying glass, powerful flashlights, laser lights, and I examine the skull completely physically. And I can determine at this point in my stage of research whether a skull has been manufactured, machined, or not, carved by hand. And that's the first step. Usually, if it's an ancient skull, it's carved by hand. However, we have to do a caveat here. Because of the work of our great friend Christopher Dunn, and I'm not skipping topics here, but Christopher Dunn has established for us now that just because something is machined does not mean it's not ancient. That's what we see in Egypt. However, the crystal skulls are a different count. I believe the ancient shamans, the masters who carved the ancient skulls, did it by hand because they were doing it to impart. This is the difference between the ancient skulls and a contemporary skull. It is the intent of the carver is put into the crystal.
So let's assume they were made that way. Why? Why did they make them? Is it artwork? I think not.
No. It is, again, we cannot go back in antiquity to find out when human beings first started working with crystals. They go back to every ancient culture we can look at, and they go back so far in time, we cannot find the origin of when people started working with crystals. But it's obvious that human beings, sometime in the dim mist of antiquity, discovered that crystals have the ability to store information, to work with energy, to transfer energy. And so that once they established that, they started to use crystals, pieces of raw crystal, as talismans, as shamanic objects, as objects to concentrate mind on, for healing, to transfer, to store energy, as we've discussed. These crystal skulls have so many different functions, but basically to store energy, to transfer energy. And then they started carving them into objects. Now, why a skull, of course, has always been one of the classic questions. Well, if indeed we say that the ancients realized that crystal can store information, and Marcel Vogel gave us a scientific theory that we can elaborate before we're finished, how it works, actually how crystal stores information. So they used them as ancient computers. They were ancient computers. Uh-huh. This is usually one of the basic things that people who get into crystal skull research come up with, and we've all come to this conclusion along the line, that they were computers. Before there were writing, before there was ability to write things down, this is how information was stored. So the ancient peoples used these objects for ritual, to raise consciousness, for healing, and to store information, knowing that it would be passed down to future generations. And this is why they are important today. This is why they're coming out today, just as both Carolyn and Yap mentioned. It is the timing now. It is the timing now why they are. And since I talked to you last year, George, a whole bunch of new skulls have emerged, and we can talk about
that's
that. True. This is such an incredible phenomenon that crystal skulls are coming out, literally out of the woodwork as we speak.
How do they pull out? How do they extract the information?
Hello?
Can you hear me?
Hello?
Uh-oh. We now have a problem.
Hello.
Okay. Steven, can you hear me?
George?
Yeah, I can hear you. Steven? Well, I think we've lost Steven, and now we know for sure that we've got a problem here, folks. We really do. We're talking about crystal skulls. The other thing we're going to get in with Steven, and we're going to get him back because we've got your phone calls with him as well. We will take them in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM. We're going to talk about Egypt and what has been going on there and since the removal of Zahi Hawass. And let's go back to some of our open line callers who've been waiting. We've got Dimitri in Fairbanks, Alaska. Still with us, Dimitri?
I still am, sir.
What are you? You're my hero. How are you?
Greetings and salutations from the land of the midnight sun, where the huskies roam in the ice and snow.
Super.
Hey, a couple of quick questions. I it's the crystal skulls that are causing all the problems. You realize that?
Yeah, something's happening. Like they're too energetic. Crazy. Let me tell you.
It's crazy. Well, it's still evening here. It's still Thursday night here. So, okay, quick question.
Sure.
The Mayan calendar, I believe, is that their astronomical calendar stretches 40,000 years?
At least, I think.
And it's spot on.
Oh, I think so.
Yeah, okay. So here's a civilization that has a calendar of that exactitude, yet they don't have the wheel in their civilization. They didn't have carts with wheels, which I found very fascinating. And so it, and if I may be wrong on this, but your earlier guest was saying about the Mayan legends of the skulls, and I seem to remember hearing that there were only 7 skulls, and they were given to the Mayans because they held great consciousness and of course, great powers, mm-hmm. as crystals do, apparently. And they were then scattered. And the reason I say 7 is because there were 7 continents, and they haven't discovered the one on Antarctica yet. And when the 7 skulls are brought back together, they need to be brought back together on December 21st, 2012, to help the transition. Because, you know, they say it. People always misname the Mayan legend of that it's the end of the world. It's just the end of this world. And then a new world begins is how the Mayans looked at the ends of worlds. There were lots of ends of worlds in their calendar.
Well, and let's hope we don't have one coming up. But what do you think these skulls were actually used for, Dimitri?
Well, I think and because we now hear about people are being drawn to them, it's the consciousness. And I think when the 7 original skulls are brought back together, again, I think this is from the Mayan legend, I could be wrong, that they are to impart a world consciousness to help the world and humanity as it is to get through this terrible strife and time that we're going through. And it's just getting worse. And it just, you know, when I heard about the calendar ending on a certain date, and I was like, boy, these people, you know, they could map the stars for 40,000 years going back into their past and into their future. And all of a sudden they say, okay, here's the thing. You got to get these 7 skulls back together or else, you know, some bad things could happen.
All right. No, you're absolutely right about that. Dimitri, thanks for calling. Let's go next to our wild card line. Welcome to Coast. You're on the air.
Thank you.
Thank you. What's on your mind?
I'm listening to your crystal skull program.
Okay.
And I remember from radio history that early radios used crystals to tune the radios. And they used a raw crystal stone and what they call a pickup, they called a cat's whisker. And they physically moved the cat's whisker over the stone to tune in different stations. The question is whether anyone has ever considered testing a crystal skull with the equivalent of a cat's whisker. It's non-destructive. Simply, they're placing a wire, very fine pickup, over a region of the skull, and they amplify
right.
it.
And what do they try to extract with that?
Well, I'm thinking is if it behaves like a regular crystal. As in the days of early radio, you should pick up a signal. So
well,
it's just, you know, I don't think anybody's
like
ever thought about it.
Like an old radio. All right, let's go to Steven. Steven's back with us. Steven,
hey,
do you think these skulls might have been old-time radios?
Yes, they are communication devices. He's correct. That is an interesting experiment. And if, you know, one of the people who have an ancient skull or even a contemporary skull could do an experiment like that. But we have felt, George, that the crystal skulls serve as interdimensional communication devices. In other words, there is those that think there's an extraterrestrial element around crystal skulls, as we mentioned. Many of us believe there's an interdimensional. In other words, there are different degrees of consciousness that exist, some that are non-physical, don't have bodies like we do. But the crystal skulls, again, I think crystal serves that way as an interdimensional communication device. So crystals can be used as communication devices, no doubt.
All right, very good. Steven, we're coming up to the break. Hold with us. We're going to take phone calls. I also want to talk with you about Egypt when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM.